Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And some little kid goes by and looks at this plaque and says, hey, this is the all-time home run king. And it took him 25 years to get in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
What the heck is going on there? Yeah. There needs to be an explanation somewhere.
Thank you, Tim. Pleasure. Avocados, by the way, very expensive lately. I hope you're okay with that. Very expensive.
Every day of my life, somebody mentions that, including today, in the hallway.
It's wonderful.
I walk by. Love avocados also. Never said hello. Just kept on walking.
So wonderful.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then, plausibly live from an as-yet undisclosed third-floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We are on the air with Gene McManus and Gary Braun, Michael Kornheiser. Nigel is running the board and will, of course, do the news. Later in the show, we will have Ann Hornaday. We will have Mike Freeman from BleacherReport.com. I look forward to that. If nobody minds, and it's a Friday, and I hope nobody minds because it's the end of the week, and I was going to open about Inauguration Day and stuff like that, but I'm going to open on a more personal note. This is very localized for me. My friend, Andy Polin, who was, when the radio station WTEM first started on Memorial Day, the Monday after Memorial Day weekend, I believe, in 1992, Andy
worked
with me.
Actually, the first thing broadcast was the car race. What is that? The Indy 500?
Indy 500.
So on Sunday is when they went.
So when we went to 24-hour-a-day talk, or mostly talk, Andy Polin was with me, and Mitch Levy, Andy Polin, and myself, and Gary joined the show within a year.
Yeah, it was Greg Garcia with you guys.
Yeah, Greg was first. Greg was
running the board. I was with you starting in October.
Yeah, so Greg was running the board. So Andy has been in talk radio in this station, in the WTEM station, in its different numbers and different owners and stuff like that since the beginning, continuously since the beginning.
The actual first voice heard on that air.
Was Andy Polin?
Was Andy, yeah.
Okay. So, and I love Andy. And Andy was basically walked out yesterday. His contract was up. He did not receive, to my knowledge, an offer of a new contract. Or if he did, it was, I just don't know. I don't have any of the details. In fact, when I walked in here this morning to do this show, which, as we know, drops at 11 o'clock Eastern and 8 o'clock Pacific, everybody knew but me. And Jeannie, you said, did you hear about Andy? And I had no idea. I had no idea.
We had to inform you that he hadn't died.
Right. Yeah. I had no idea.
Your first thought was so.
Yeah. So I really like Andy. And
love Andy.
Yeah, this is a very localized thing for, you know, for people in the Washington, D.C. environs. And other people may not know Andy because he's not been on it. He's been on the show once or twice, but few and far between because he's had other work. He does a show in the morning or used to do a show on Monday morning with Kip Scheman. The Monday morning quarterbacking show after the Washington Redskins played, that was the best thing on the air.
It was fantastic.
Whenever it was on, no matter what else was on, including this show, my show, that was the best thing on the air. So if Andy is listening and Andy wants to get into the podcast business, I know some people who can help him. And I'm one of those people because, Gene, you said that he should do that show as a podcast.
Yeah,
and he should.
And he could do it from Chad's. Wouldn't that
be
fun?
That's
a winning idea.
Yes, by then I hope we will have a studio built and I hope we will have a new name, but yes.
I would hope you would. That's 9 months or something.
Yes.
Monday
evening quarterback.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Pre-Monday night football action. That would be awesome.
So we love Andy and
I'm worried about what this is going to do to his wardrobe budget now that he's lost his job.
Well, Michael has, what is your
got
idea?
Some old rags.
Yeah.
Well, we received an email to the mailbag that he could wear a Chad's polo shirt, which might double the wardrobe. According to the records.
He could maitre d' the restaurant.
Yes, he could do all of those things.
Can I just
Andy,
add,
who famously spends $200 a year on clothing. On a good year. Some years less than that.
Right. Under budget.
Yeah.
I would just add to that, and I honestly do not think this can be overstated. I mean, we forget sort of where we came from sometimes and what the whole sports radio thing has grown into. But in 1992... Well, I know WFAN was on the air. I believe there may
EEI, I think, was on in Boston.
Right. And I think there may have been one
Philadelphia,
in
Philadelphia, maybe. I don't know.
I was going to say San Diego. There were three or four max. I'm talking three or four sports radio stations in the world.
Yeah.
All right. And Andy started this one, when I say this
Andy
one,
had worked at the Fan.
Yes.
He had worked at the Fan in New York, the most famous of them all. And the two most famous people there were Chris Russo and Mike Francesa.
And,
yes.
And in that regard, was an absolute pioneer. And there is no one in this market, and I mean no one, including everyone in this room, doing sports radio that doesn't owe something
to Andy.
Because
right.
he either paved the way or he helped us. And I came, I mean, I graduated college on Saturday. I started working at that station on Sunday. And there were a handful of us at that time, and Andy...
And then when we found out he failed two of his finals and had to go back to school, he was out of money.
Andy, at the time, I'm going to say, was 30, going on 50? How old's Andy
yeah.
now?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
Andy was the oldest 30-year-old I had ever met, uh-huh. but just... Always had
without
a minute
ego.
To
without
teach
ego.
You.
If he was there, you. If he was there to be my sidekick, that's all he
right.
would. I mean, he was so supportive
and
so loyal and supportive.
And the touch of absolutely the touch of an axe murderer.
Yes,
when it came to sort of like helping you out or sharing his opinion, but always constructive, always yeah, right. in the interest of helping you. And it's been a friend.
Yes.
ever since. I mean, Andy was at my wedding. That's been 20 plus years, and he'll be at my next one. And you know, I love the guy to death. As yeah. anyone who listens,
so we'll help.
But
him
I would also add,
he's really good.
He works for a radio station that is currently owned by Dan Snyder. He was unsparing in his criticism of the Redskins.
Yeah.
As loyal as he was, it did not prevent him from being absolutely objective
Fair.
About that
and
team.
Yeah.
And it needs to also
Never
be said
personal.
That Dan Snyder, who meddled in his own team's affairs as much as any owner in the history of sports, never
Correct.
Once said anything to Andy Pollin about you're too harsh on the team. Mm-hmm. Never once. They both actually were coated in glory as a result
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So,
and
so
was, and
yeah.
the,
it's a great run.
Unfortunately,
well,
one of,
there's more left.
There's more left.
One of the worst things about this business is sort of how those things are typically handled.
Oh, it's always handled like Goodfellas.
Andy finished his Thursday show, was called into the boss's office and told, congratulations, you've done your last show. And let me just say, I don't mean to editorialize here, but
well,
that guy had earned more. He earned
yes.
the right to go
yes,
on and
absolutely.
Say goodbye.
Yes.
He wasn't going to burn bridges or blow
By
anything
the way,
up.
Andy was once, I'm pretty sure Andy was fired from the Fan in one of the bloodlettings at the mm-hmm. Fan early on, WFAN in New York City, and then had about, before this station started, or the station I worked for, WTEM started. Andy worked in like a Foot Locker kind of store. Andy sold shoes.
That's right. Al
sneakers.
Bundy.
He used to joke about him being like Al Bundy.
It was
the worst. He used to say it was the worst extended period of his life.
Oh, dear.
But he also said from the day, because I came over from the Washington Post. I've told this story many times, and I guess I should probably, I'll scrap the regular beginning
yeah,
of this
reset
show.
Yeah, just reset it.
Yeah, we don't care about
so
the
I told
hours
that. I told this story many times that when the station, when WTEM was first started in Washington, D.C., I was approached by a guy named Scott Meyer. Scott Meyer had something to do, important something to do with the beginning of the Fan in New York City that was wildly successful mostly because of Russo and Francesa, who had just great chemistry despite the fact that everybody said they hated each other. They were just great on the air. They could do I am not kidding now. They could do 5 hours on one double play at a Yankee game.
Yes,
and you would
right.
be driving up from Washington to Manhattan for 3.5 to 4 hours, and that's all they did. And you said, more. Give me more on this.
Mikey.
They're just brilliant. Yeah. They're just brilliant. So Andy had worked there. When our station started, Andy said to me, we'll be off in 2 years. Oh, we'll be fired. We'll be lucky. We'll be lucky to get 2 years in. That would be the greatest thing in the world, Andy said, if I got 2 years here. It's 25 years.
Think you'd take a quarter century?
It's 25 years. And he is beloved and should be beloved.
Yes.
You know, he deserves it. He's a fine person. And as I'm saying this, we're going to try and put together a podcast studio that is unrivaled in this area. And all I mean by that is not the studio itself, but the amount of people who are going to take to this new form and attempt to do on-demand audio. Now, all I ask of all of them is to please make lots of money, because then I'm going to charge you for the space. But I wish all of them success. And if Andy wants to get involved, and he might, or he might go to another station. I mean, I don't know. But if Andy wants to get involved with that particular show, at the very least, yeah, that would be great.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and so that would be great.
Literally.
So, yes.
With you, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Jewish Hall of Fame?
Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. Yeah. I'm in a lot of Hall of Fames, though, or Halls
That's
of
true.
Fame. I mean, because he's not in the George W. Hewlett High School Hall of Fame.
No, he's not.
He's not
yet. I think he's up this year.
He's in the, where did he go?
Is he in the Washington Sports? Is he in the Washington Sports Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
Yeah, because one of us is going to be in that this year.
Wow.
So, did I say that?
One of us?
One of us.
Yeah. I'm the first woman?
I haven't decided who yet. No, Brennan's in.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Brennan's in. So, okay.
What'd that cost you?
So, The inauguration is today in Washington, D.C. Because I personalize everything, I'm concerned about driving downtown.
Yeah, you should be.
I'm concerned about
traffic.
Not so much driving downtown as driving back. I'm more concerned about driving back because the inauguration will be going on when I drive downtown.
Plus
I did watch. I watched last night. I don't know how many people watched last night. And I wanted to watch last night when Donald Trump and his family were at the Lincoln Memorial. There was a concert, a relatively patriotic concert with very nice fireworks, it seemed to me. I thought they were pretty nice. And he made some remarks, mostly benign. Mostly about how great he is and how he's going to change
everything.
How awesome
the next 4 years will be.
And you know what? Good.
Yeah.
And you know
Let's
what?
Hope he's right.
I'm going to editorialize here, which is what my job is. I hope he's right.
Me too.
I hope he's great. I hope this about every president coming
right.
in. I will not even turn to my right on this. I hope he's great. And I think most people do hope he's great. And he's going to be inaugurated. Will this have started already?
Noon.
Okay, so you'll be able
Kickoff
to hear about
noon.
That. And it's going to suppose, I think it's going to rain.
Yeah.
It's supposed to rain all day. And he said last night, I don't care if it rains, but I think it'll be a beautiful day. And you know, and you hope it will be.
That's
you hope it will be
optimist.
A beautiful day.
Hope
yeah.
for the best, expect the worst.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
good advice in life.
That's
yep.
exactly right. Now, I am interested because I did watch the morning shows, and I am interested because he's going to make an inaugural address, which is said that he wrote it himself. And it is said not to be a particular policy address. It's said to touch certain themes of everybody doing better together, which is, you know, that would be nice if that was the case. At some point, he's going to have policy, but I don't think he has to have it today. I really don't.
Maybe Monday.
Yeah. Well, when he gets back from playing golf.
When it starts?
Yeah, when the job starts.
It's weekends off.
Again, it's very interesting to me that actually in the Constitution, the only date mentioned is this date. It's Inauguration Day. So you would think, I don't know, you'd think it starts now, even if it's a Friday. You think it would start now, but perhaps not. Perhaps it'll start on Monday. And he'll play golf for a while. I know I would. If it's supposed to be nice out, I would love to play golf. So I wish him, and I think I speak for most, wish him all the luck in the world. Oakland, just to touch on sports briefly, Oakland is going to Las Vegas. California, two teams, one is leaving California, one is leaving where it is in California. The San Diego Chargers are going to Los Angeles. The Oakland Raiders are going to Las Vegas. The Los Angeles Rams are coming in, and this is all tied together in this. The state of California has wisely determined, why are we building football stadiums? Why are we building billion-dollar stadiums that are occupied by a football team, eight regular season dates, and two exhibition games? Why are we doing that? Maybe we'll build a baseball stadium, maybe not, but we're not building these things anymore. And so because it's a business, the San Diego owner took his team to Los Angeles, so it's still in Southern California. Because it's a business and more than that, because it's their move, the Oakland Raiders who have left Oakland before and returned are leaving again to go to Las Vegas. And Stan Kroenke's building a stadium by himself with his own money. It's good. I mean, that's what he ought to do. Las Vegas, people are saying, well, why would you go to Las Vegas? You'd go to Las Vegas because they're going to build you a great stadium. And because, you know what? People spend money in Las Vegas. They go to Las Vegas to spend money. And now the big sports in Las Vegas is boxing. And boxing is random. And football is scheduled. And they'll sell out every game.
Oh, yeah.
They'll sell out every single game. Oh, yeah. And you get rid of the nonsense about gambling. You know, the NFL's position, the holier-than-thou position. Oh, gambling. How can we do anything in the middle of the sin
Just
of Las Vegas?
It.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop. If not for point spreads, you're soccer. It's not as simple
Tony,
as that.
When teams,
not for point spreads, you're soccer.
When road teams come to Las Vegas to play the Raiders, you don't think that's going to be a huge road trip opportunity for supporters? Hey, let's go to Vegas and see the skins.
Right. Everybody's going to do it. Everybody is going to do it, and the notion that somehow the owners would say no is so crazy that it can't even be entertained, right?
Is it true that they chose Vegas because it's the only place with in America with less water than California? I mean, what, they're going to go to the Sahara Desert next?
The drought's over. The drought was declared over because of the recent flooding rains
and
that are all
snows.
Over. In the snows. Yeah, in the Sierras.
Yeah.
So all of that.
The
all right, so we'll take
changing.
A break. Ann Hornaday will join us when we return. She has three movies. The biggest movie is The Founder, the story of Ray Kroc. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the MeUndies read, and this is the Valentine's Day MeUndies read, because Valentine's Day, I think this year it's February 14th. I don't know where it was last year, but I think this year Valentine's Day is February 14th on my calendar anyway. This Valentine's Day, give a gift that they can unwrap again and again, matching underwear from MeUndies. Valentine's Day is near, and it is go time
for thoughtful gift hunting. MeUndies has you covered. You see how they did that? Covered. With limited edition matching pairs of undies for you and yours. Has Valentine's Day got you stumped? Do you sense the repetitiveness of the copy? Because we're talking about Valentine's Day and underpants a lot.
It's almost like they're trying to sell something.
Forget the cliches and give a gift that looks great, feels great, and will make everyone happy. MeUndies. Fancy dinners, chocolate, that lasts a night. Flowers last a week. This year, give the gift of looking great and feeling great every day with the world's most comfortable underwear. MeUndies are the perfect gift for you and your Valentine this holiday. They're unbelievably soft, and they come in limited edition prints. MeUndies knows that your special someone deserves a special fabric, which is why their underwear is exclusively made out of modal or modal. We had a very funny email because it's just printed, and it says it's pronounced, and it just writes M-O-D-A-L. No, it doesn't even say how it's done, because we don't know how it's done. It's either modal or modal. A fabric with a touch three times softer than cotton. MeUndies has a special limited edition Valentine's undies, which means you and your Valentine can match. And yeah, it's as cute as it sounds. And if for some reason you and MeUndies are not a perfect match, they will give you your money back and let you keep the first pair. There's no refund on a bad fancy dinner. They offer free shipping, and for a limited time, listeners to this podcast get 20% off their first order. But you have to go to MeUndies.com/TonyK. With the MeUndies Better Day Guarantee, you have nothing to lose. Don't wait any longer. Go to MeUndies.com/TonyK right now for 20% off your first order. That's MeUndies. It's MeUndies.com/TonyK.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You talk about movies on this show on Fridays. Know the ones he leaves early, about 20 to go.
Yeah, but I go home and I watch the endings.
And what about parking?
It's always an issue.
I hope it's not credit only.
Yeah, it's tough.
It cash. Is. I live in a cash world.
Straight cash always homie. He'll wait for
and the second verse is about you interrupting her and disagreeing with her.
Yeah, this is the great Sean Morrissey playing us in for Anne Hornaday, who comes on Fridays. She has three movies to talk about, and be warned now. Be warned now, this may go a little long because I have seen Jackie and I have seen Moonlight, and I am not sure we agree. So, I'm just telling you now.
I thought you'd want to go long and talk about XXX, The Return of Xander Cage.
No, but I did watch Vin Diesel this morning when he was on SportsCenter for about 11 minutes explaining his motivation to become an actor, which grew out of, and this will surprise everyone,
need for
petty
money.
Theft of bicycles or something like that in New York City. So let me start with The Founder, and this is about Ray Kroc. It has Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton has, in the past 3 years, three gigantic roles. He had Birdman, he had Spotlight, right? Spotlight, and now The Founder. My initial sort of thought about this was it probably isn't that good because it didn't come out during the awards season. It's coming out early the next year, which means I guess that somebody thought, it's not that good. I'm hoping this is good because I do like Michael Keaton, and I suspect that the story of Ray Kroc is a wonderful story. So what do you got?
Well, it's a strange movie. I mean, it's not bad.
Well, that is.
Left me,
that's a rave.
No, but it left me really strangely unaffected. And I think your last words just put the finger on it for me, which is it's not a wonderful story.
Oh.
I mean, it's an interesting, I guess it's an interesting story about, the title is ironic because we think of Ray Kroc as the founder of McDonald's, but he wasn't.
Isn't. It was the McDonald's brothers.
Were actually people named McDonald's.
He was the stealer. He took it from them.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's the story of that. It's the story of him as a salesman kind of bamboozling these guys. And bamboozling, but also knowing, being very wise about culture and about how American culture was changing and cars and lifestyles and families. And so, I'm trying to, it's a great performance by Keaton. I mean, it's the third of a really impressive trifecta,
yeah,
as you
yeah,
just said.
Yeah.
It's the movie itself really didn't I wanted a more probing film, and I wanted a film with a little bit more of a point of view. I think that to its credit, it doesn't baff you over the head with, capitalism bad, this man bad. But I could have used a little more of a pointed tone, I think. It just kind of happens, and you just kind of see this thing happen, and it's kind of a shrug. And I didn't find it that compelling as a film. But if this story interests you at all, if you're a Michael Keaton fan, then I think it'll be really gratifying.
How about Nick Offerman, who I'm a fan of?
Oh, he's wonderful, and he has a wonderful. I guess that's part of it is that it kind of ping pongs back and forth between his relationship with the brothers and then his personal. He has three marriages, one of which is completely erased from the record in this film, and in a way, I wanted it to go deeper into this relationship with these brothers, of whom Nick Offerman is one, and because they're such poignant figures. I mean, I don't want to spoil much, but oh my goodness!
I wish the movie had been made from their perspective. What a different movie it would be.
In a way, Gene. Yeah, I mean, it's like I would have. Yeah, I don't know. I need
sequel.
To kind of almost watch it again to take it apart a little bit better, so I can figure out why I didn't like it more.
Am I right on this? I mean, these movies are in the can for a year before they come out. Am I right that the studio must have felt, we're not going to get anything from this in the Oscars, so let's just wait a while?
Well, you know what it is? It's a Weinstein movie.
Right.
And obviously their big Oscar movie this year is Lion.
Well, okay, so they didn't want to conflict.
And I guess they just, I don't know how they think, but that's what that would be my assumption, is that, we have this one, we have one or the other, and we're going to go with that one. Although, I guess they thought maybe, I'm a little surprised they haven't fought harder for Keaton in the Best Actor race, because I think he might have had a shot because he's so beloved. But I think Lion is where they're putting their
Dak
energy.
And Zeke, Tony, like the Dak and Zeke principle. They don't want to be going at each other.
I understand that.
Taking votes from each other.
I understand that. Split is a movie. I don't get his name right. M. Night. Shyamalan, something like that.
Shyamalan, ding dong.
Whatever it is. I never watch his movies since the movie with Bruce Willis and the kid.
You saw that one.
Yeah, I don't watch his movies because they actually scare me.
Terrifying.
I know.
I don't watch his movies. I can't help at all with this. This is called Split. It's apparently, it's written to me, the abduction of three women by a single person with a multi-personality grouping. Any good? I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to see this
The
movie.
Trailers for this are terrifying.
I will not.
James McAvoy, who's quite a talented actor.
I'm not going to see this. Because everything he does is
terrifying.
Scary to me. Yeah. I won't
scary.
See it.
I know. I have to say, when I saw The Sixth Sense, my husband came with me. I've never seen him scared ever. And he was freaked out.
Yeah, this
I mean,
is not
he
for
was
me.
Freaked out for like days. He was very yeah, that's the one that will get under your skin. And I think, the thing about Shyamalan is that's how I pronounce it. I don't know how to pronounce it either. A lot of us have thought that he's lost his way in recent years, and his movies have actually been pretty disappointing. And many, if not most, of my colleagues are calling this his return to form, but I did not. It left me completely cold on so many levels. I just thought it was absolutely preposterous. I didn't believe a word of it. I will say, McAvoy is amazing. I mean, it's a real showcase for him. It's he gets to play all these different personalities. Sometimes in the course of one piece of dialogue, he'll switch, and it's very impressive. But the story is ludicrous and borderline offensive. And I have this kind of pet peeve against movies that kind of abhor the thing that they're exploiting, and in this case, it's it's not women he abducts; it's teenage girls, and it gets into kind of exploiting the titillation of a teenage girl taking her clothes off while saying, "Oh, isn't that awful that he's making her take her clothes off?" And I hate that. I think it's hypocritical, and it's morally offensive, and I'm done with it. And I'm done with that being the kind of fulcrum of a narrative. I just think it's cynical and it's opportunistic, and I'm against it.
Amen.
So do you think there's a chance I might like
it? Is it scary?
Don't walk.
You aren't saying it's not scary, though, right? Or is it just you just couldn't get past that, and it's lost?
Scary. I think I think that gets into the preposterousness for me, made it less scary.
Okay.
Just because. You know, and he does have a tick, and the tick is that he goes for suspense and scariness, which is fine, because that's something we go to the movies for. But then he mixes in kind of supernatural superhero stuff. Yeah. Like, he did that in...
Unbreakable, or...
Exactly.
I'm not watching.
And I just, I don't find that mix at all kind of convincing. I think one kind of X's out the other.
All right, we're done.
You know,
we're moving on.
I recently saw
what?
Sixth Sense again.
No. Mm-hmm.
Which I hadn't seen in years. And it's interesting you say that, because it's like, at no point in that do you feel like he's going for the suspense.
Because you've never
sort of
seen
there.
Him before.
Exactly.
Right, but in everything since, The Village and Unbreakable.
Because he clearly feels that this is his move and he has to live up to it.
They should have broken his camera.
Bigger and stronger all the time. It's like those directors that you can't just blow up one house. I did that in my first movie. Now I have to blow up the city.
Right. You know,
and then in my fifth movie, I have to blow up the world. So,
exactly.
Okay.
And with him, I almost want him to do a superhero movie. It's like they should put him on the Marvel or the DC franchise. Like, see what he could do with something like that.
I'm not.
Because that's kind of where his, I mean, I kind of feel like he could do something really interesting in that, rather than keep going back to the same well over and over. But.
All right, so you didn't particularly like The Founder.
No,
you
I didn't
like Split at all. But now, the redemptive movie, Vin Diesel, with the return of Xander Bogarts, or whatever this guy's name is, in Triple X.
It is Xander Bogarts.
Vin Diesel,
right.
One of the great.
Oh, my God.
I mean, Vin Diesel, let's be fair, he knows what he does well.
True.
He knows what he does well.
True.
How good is this?
Is it Fast and is it Furious?
Is it
That's
good?
Exactly what it is. It's like a placeholder. It's like you can't have your Fast and Furious sequel yet, so here's this. I mean, it's so redolent of those. And I am a big Fast and Furious fan. I mean, I think they have got it. They've got it down. They know what they're doing. It's delightful.
He said this was funny. I watched him on SportsCenter today.
Really?
He said there's a lot of laughs.
Oh.
You get to see me smile, and I was so upset.
What a joy.
Because Paul Walker, was that his name?
Yeah.
Because Paul Walker died. And I couldn't stand finishing that movie, and now finally I've got the role that allows me to smile.
Okay.
So did you laugh a lot?
No, I didn't. And it's
laugh at all?
I'm going to get on my high horse again about... I'm going to pull the lens back like I did on Split and say that what this movie does that I hate is it has that snarky cynicism. Like, everybody's real casual, and they're very cynical, and everybody sucks, and the government is corrupt, and, you know, it's another, and it also traffics in my least favorite form of violence, which is wanton mayhem and gun fetish, you know, just all over the place without a drop of blood. I mean, you don't see one consequence to the violence. And it's just utterly kind of disregarding of human life or compassion. I mean, it's gross. I just
like
I hate to be such a school
mom
today, but these are the values that really, really bother me. And so I can't
That's
get
why we
it.
Have you
and
on.
So, The humor, I guess I see where he's... And it's funny, you know who's in this is Toni Collette from...
I like her.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
I like her.
And her character is so... Oh, it's just so offensive. It's just that casual cynicism, that kind of sarcastic, eye-rolling, you know, evil that I just find... I don't find it very useful, especially right now. I'm very done with that.
Okay,
Tony, listen. This is the one sentence plot summary from IMDb. Xander Cage is left for dead after an incident, though he secretly returns to action for a new tough assignment with his handler Augustus Gibbons.
Yeah, well,
there you go.
I'm done with
That's
that.
Pretty good.
Wow, how can I?
It's funny because it's like it does make you think of the Fast and Furious, and it makes you realize how much they get right, and it made me appreciate that franchise all the more.
Can I mention a couple of movies here?
Of course.
Can I take just a couple of minutes?
I live for this.
So
I
went back and I saw La La Land again all the way to the end, and I loved it. I loved it even more than when I left with about 20 minutes to go. I really loved it. I'm not saying it's a great movie. I'm saying I really loved it. Then I saw Jackie.
Okay.
And I will concede a couple of things. One is that Natalie Portman is breathtaking. I mean, she's just so spectacular, and she gets it, it seems to me, at my age, she gets it right. And the second thing is I really do like the structure. I love the three interweaving things of the day of, the day after is one part, the interview, which may or may not have ever taken place, and the confessional scenes. And I love all of those.
And the tour. My God.
Here's my problem.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my problem. Mm-hmm. And it's willfully done. The movie opens, for those of you who haven't seen it, I'm not going to give anything away. It's a real-life thing. No, I'm not. I'm just going to say, I'm going to give my impression of it.
Kennedy dies?
That it opens, in which Jackie Kennedy, recently widowed, is living at the house in Hyannisport in the winter, and it's cold, and all of her clothing is cold, and all of her actions are cold, and even the menthol cigarettes that she smokes are cold.
Yeah.
And there is a cynicism to this movie and this character, the notion that she has, in the screenwriter's eyes, she has invented for her own benefit and for the benefit of the legacy of her husband, she has invented the mythology that I wrap myself in because of my age. I told you this when you first reviewed this
movie. I remember that.
I didn't want anybody messing around with John and Jackie Kennedy.
Right.
And the other thing that I don't like about them, and it's not that I don't like it, it's just that there's a cynicism to this. You mentioned cynicism in these other movies. There's a cynicism to this that bothers me. And I also don't think they got the character of Bobby Kennedy close to right. I mean, I just didn't. I never felt, not for one second, I never felt that was Bobby Kennedy. So while I think it's a great performance for me, and Jeannie's angry at me because she hasn't seen the movie, but for me, it just wasn't great. It just wasn't great.
See, it's funny that you think of it as cynical. I thought it was brilliant. And I think that rather than, see, I don't see her as being self-serving when she's talking, you know, when she's building the myth. I think of her as, you know, you left out a strain. You left out a structural piece, which is the White House tour.
Oh, yeah. That's right. The Edward R. Murrow White House tour. Yeah.
You know, they recreate that, and you literally cannot tell which is which.
No, it's great.
You know?
It's great.
But I think what that shows you is how brilliant she was at understanding that we need narrative, and we need myth, and we need these objects, and we need history. And when she's in that car and she asks the driver, what do you know about Garfield? What do you know about,
McKinley?
She understands that it wasn't just for her, although it was. It wasn't just a self-serving thing for her late husband, although it was. It was also for the country. You know, there are lines where she says people need characters. They don't, you know, they need these narratives. They need these rituals. I mean, we're going to see one today. It's like, and she did understand that, and I don't think it was cynical. I think it was that she had a classical education. She was incredibly well-read and very sensitive, and she understood the arts. And I think it's like an incredibly sympathetic portrait of her, also reminding us, A, how young she was with these two little children, having lost two babies. I mean, you really get inside her grief in a way that I found was incredibly compassionate.
Maybe I'm wrong.
No,
I end every conversation with Anne by saying,
nobody's wrong. I just think it's funny. And also, Tony, here's the difference, too. I've now seen it 3 times, and the movie's really deepened for me each time.
Okay.
So I totally understand where you're coming from. You know, it's such a jarring film to see. It's like
when they first set her up, the whiteness and coldness of it seems to me to be
jarring.
Very, very deliberate. And
oh,
by the way, I don't know what's real.
They're telling you off the bat, we're going to mess with you.
Right.
We're messing with you right now. And I think that's good that they say that. It's like they're not making any bones about it. It's like they, from the get, they're telling you, this is not the Jackie Kennedy you think you
is
know.
It history? I mean, is it, well, it? Did these things happen? Was there this interview?
It's about, I think it addresses that exact question. What is history? What is myth? Let's not quite be quite so credulous when, you know, like, let's just realize people are behind all these things and we never get the full story. And I know what you mean about that interview you know, they don't name that interviewer.
No,
he's just called the author in the film, played by Billy Crudup. But it's pretty clear it was based on Theodore White in the Life magazine interview. But also, I think they took from the Schlesinger interviews. They took from the Manchester interview. You know, like, she gave a lot of off-the-record, you know, she gave a lot of interviews where she exerted authorial control and said, you cannot use this. This cannot be seen until X number of years after my death or, you know. So I do think it's supported. I don't think it's necessarily literal truth, but I do think it's supported.
Okay.
I don't think that they took any offensive liberties with this movie.
I'll watch it again. You're smarter than I am, and movies
are
your deal.
That's not true.
I have no time to get to Moonlight. I have no time to get to Moonlight.
Next week,
I will get to Moonlight.
Okay.
But I will offer a relatively responsible opposing view.
Yeah, we'll talk about Oscar nominations next week, okay. That'll give us our chance.
Thank you, Anne.
Always a pleasure.
Anne Hornaday, boys and girls, we will take a short break, and we will come back with Nigel in the news. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Paul Cody from Chicago. The band is called Paul Cody and the Edsel Brothers. The song is called Bad Days, Good Nights. I owned an Edsel. My parents owned an Edsel.
Oh, really?
Really?
What color was it? Black. It was an Edsel Citation. It was the top of the line Edsel.
Nice.
It was a 1958 Edsel, the first year Edsels were made. They were only made in 58, 59, and 60. And they bought it in 1961 used. It was the only luxury car I was ever in the first 55 years of my life. I don't know why they got rid of it, but they got rid of it. I tried to buy an Edsel a couple of years ago. I want to own an Edsel.
Oh,
if anybody's
cool
out there, I want to own an Edsel. I don't want to own...
Randy can be had.
I don't want to own a Ranger. I want to own a Citation. I want to own the top of the line Edsel, which was about 50 feet long. It was really long.
I think if you go to Havana, you could probably get one, right?
I don't want to go to Havana for it because I have to fly. I don't want to do that. Michael, if people want to send in music, and that music by Paul Cody, that was really
good.
Very
nice, Paul.
How do they do it?
They can email jingles at tonykornheisershow.com.
Okay. And if they want to buy gear, and then those would include... what are we selling these days?
You're pushing those sweatshirts hard.
Well, no,
we still have some t-shirts. We have some coffee mugs and the sweatshirt.
We are
getting ready for a big sticker announcement, but we're not ready just yet.
Ooh, wow. That's exciting.
So they can go to shop.tonykornheisershow.com.
Is this an announcement about a big sticker or a big announcement about a sticker? When you say a big sticker announcement.
Fathead sticker, you know?
Tony, 1958 Edsel Citation Convertible Green, 143rd scale. Model.
No, I don't want a model. Yeah. Well, I could buy a model.
Yeah,
I can buy a model.
How
much is a model?
They're made of kids' hands.
$10.
No, I would like
I'll get you a model.
I want the model. I don't want
I will
green.
Get you a model.
I had a black.
I'm looking for a real vehicle. And
can
I
explain that it had.
Please don't send us.
People are so young that they're not even going to know what I'm talking about when I say this. It was a push button gear shift. All right, this became very popular in the early and mid 60s. A push button gear shift so that you didn't have to
1960s?
Use not the 1860s. You didn't have to use the column.
Stick on the column.
The push button was right in the middle of the wheel of the steering wheel. What do they call that thing? The knob of the wheel, right in the middle.
Yeah.
What's it called?
The center of the wheel.
Where the center, where the horn is.
The sun.
Yeah, where the horn is.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the horn is.
Right.
That's where the push button was.
But sometimes the push button was on the console.
On an Edsel, yes.
Yeah.
But on an Edsel, it was right there, right in front of you. You didn't have to move your hand to the right or anything. It was right there, right in front of you. This car was great. This car was a dream. This car, those days, probably cost $3,000. That is the equivalent now of a $75,000 car.
So the only...
And I have no idea why my parents got rid of the car. They got rid of the car within a year and a half. I mean, maybe it broke down all the time. I don't have any recollection of that. But I've wanted an Edsel since then. And for some reason, I began to look this up a few years ago, and most of the Edsels in captivity seem to live in Texas. I don't know why. They live in Texas.
They retire there.
Yeah,
it's like Florida for Jews.
Yeah, must be.
So a 1958 Edsel Ranger base.
I don't want a Ranger.
Okay, I'm just telling you this is the only car.
I don't want the Pacer. I don't want the Ranger. I want the Citation.
Well, the only Edsel my quick search can find online is a Ranger base for $16,450 plus $6.80 shipping, oddly. I think it would probably cost more than that to ship. But
yes, I would think so.
Runs like a clock. I don't know what that means, but it's been mostly repaired. You can repaired and restored. You can see some pictures here.
That's
looks
okay.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Where is
but
it
that's,
located?
But that's not. Is it in Texas? But that's not a Citation.
Right.
There may not be any Edsel Citations left. I don't know.
It's got to be one.
And I'm willing.
It's located in the United States.
If I bought a restaurant,
Louisiana.
I'm certainly willing to buy an Edsel. As long as somebody brings it to my house.
That actually does not sound like a lot of money for a working Edsel, 16-5.
Working is the operative word.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Runs like a clean, it doesn't.
Starts.
Yes.
Where do you go for parts for?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm not going to drive it.
He restored himself.
I'm not going to drive it.
That's part of the joy of a vehicle like this.
Would you be interested in a Solstice? It's been barely
I've
driven.
Got a Solstice. I want to sell my Solstice. If anybody wants to buy my Solstice, it needs a new battery. I'll put a new battery in for you. It's not a problem. I'm too big and I'm too old. And my children have cars and, you know, a Michael and Liz are too big for it.
Wait, we're trying to sell this. Don't reveal that.
What?
If you can't fit in the driver's seat if you're over 6 feet tall.
So we want somebody a little bit. You can fit in at 6 feet tall, but it's not.
Don't diminish the trade value. Don't talk the player down before you dump him.
Sports car. It's a sports car.
Yes.
Okay. And at my age, I can't get in and out of it anymore.
It's really low.
Without hurting my
it's
back.
It's really low and small.
Yeah. Yes. So you know,
great trunk space
lovely.
Too.
Yeah. As long as the top is up. When the top is down and in the trunk, there's not as much trunk space as you might like. Let's say you want to buy something.
Stick a gun.
But if you want my car, I'm certainly willing
good
to
news
sell
cast,
it.
Good newscast,
nice.
Yeah. Do you want to do the news, please?
I don't know. I'm having fun with this. Westbrook is not going to be going to the All-Star.
No, he's going
to
be going, but not as a starter.
Because there's this new voting system where fans account for 50% of the vote. Current players in media account for 25% each. Now, Westbrook was tied with Curry and Harden and the points tally after finishing first in the media vote and player vote and third in the fan vote. But the fan vote is the tiebreaker, so he loses out to Curry and Harden. The same thing happened to Isaiah Thomas. He loses out to DeRozan of Toronto.
Let's understand something. Russell Westbrook is the most spectacular, exciting player so far in the NBA this season. He's averaging 30 points, 10 assists, and 10 rebounds. Nobody else is doing that. It's ridiculous that he's not starting. I don't take the position of screaming at fans. I don't care about that. I'm just saying it's ridiculous that he's not starting. When you go to the East, and this is something germane for people in the Washington area, John Wall did not receive the starting nod. He didn't get as many votes from all of these groups as did Isaiah Thomas, not that Isaiah Thomas, and DeMar DeRozan. And John Wall, the Wizards won last night. And they won on the road, and they beat the Knicks despite 25 points from Carmelo Anthony in the second quarter and 34 in the game. And John Wall had a big game. He had 29 points and 13 rebounds. And Otto Porter.
Only two turns, too.
Otto Porter, who was given up for dead
yep.
At the beginning of the year, and the Wizards said they didn't want to renegotiate a better deal with him, had 23, and he's playing great. But would you I'm stepping away from criticizing John Wall. Because he has proven to be all those things that I thought he wasn't. I am saying how great he has been. They won last night when Bradley Beal only got 8 points. And their bench did well. They got 27 points, which is good
enough.
John
Wall won that game.
John Wall did. But if you could get straight up, you traded John Wall for Kyrie Irving, would you make that deal? I would make that deal. I would trade John Wall to get Steph Curry, to get Russell Westbrook, to get James Harden, to get Kyrie Irving. To get Chris Paul. I mean, there's an age difference there, obviously. I might try to get Damian Lillard. I might try to get Mike Conley Jr. I might try to get DeMar DeRozan. So, and it's no knock on Wall. It seems like the
Here
point.
Here come the headline writers.
Right, I was just
no,
saying
no, it's
that.
No knock on Wall. It Corn seems like. Well, no, I might on those things, but it seems like the deepest and most talented position in the league seems to be point guard. So you can be John Wall and you can be great.
It's like the opposite of the NFL.
And that doesn't mean that there aren't people that you would rather have. And John Wall's having a great season.
Yes.
He's at the. I think you could argue those last three names you mentioned, but certainly not the first five. He's at the top of that second tier.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where he is.
He's really great.
Right.
He's having a great, great year, and as a result, so are the Wizards.
And on the Westbrook thing, you could argue that Curry and Harden are better, I guess. I'm putting that in air quotes.
Well,
I don't know what that means. But here's what you can't argue. That dude, Westbrook, that guy was built for an All-Star game.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to see him in the All-Star game.
The good thing is Westbrook probably won't take this as motivational play with a chip on his shoulder.
He never takes these things seriously.
Oh, my God. Sure. By the way, about that the Wizards game, there was a little bit of controversy at the end of it. New York's guard, Courtney Lee, who I guess was set up to take the last shot.
Didn't take it.
Didn't take it because there was an assistant by the Wizards whose name, Sidney Lowe, was on the court.
Sidney Lowe is an Local assistant guy. For the Wizards now?
Yes.
After all those years of being a head coach in the league. North yes. Carolina State championship team, the Jim Valvano team. Sidney Lowe, Derek Wittenberg of the guards.
Wasn't Sidney Lowe from here?
Yeah, DeMatha.
Yeah.
Courtney Lee said that... that he heard Lowe was on the court and heard him shouting as who's defender. And when you see the stop for the still frame of videos, he's definitely on the court.
He's over the line for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he's way over the line. And so Lee thought he was a defender. So he said, oh, somebody's coming at me. So instead of shooting, he put the ball down. And that was on
the
afterwards.
Man up. Take yes. the shot.
He said, I should have taken the shot. Yeah. He said, I should have just done it.
Courtney Lee took 1,000 of those shots in college.
Yeah.
Right? Courtney Lee was a good player in college.
I don't remember.
No, he was a good player.
Where did he play? So, do you remember?
I thought he played either at Florida or Kansas, but I'm sure I'm wrong.
Okay, you may be right.
You know,
so there you
Can
go.
Can you look him up and
I
see
will
where
do that
he
right now, yes.
I thought he played at either of those.
By the way, I looked up Andy Pollin, not in the Washington Sports Hall of Fame.
Well, he will be.
Yes, he will be.
I will
be.
Get him in.
Western Kentucky, Courtney Lee.
Okay, so I had that you're completely wrong. I wasn't even...
You said Kentucky?
No, I said Kansas. Oh, I wasn't even close. Not even close. And
well,
I said
it
Florida.
Is close. They're yes. both West Coast.
Right, yeah.
It's ridiculous. Capitals, enough. We don't... No more. The Capitals got 7 goals last night and won this time. The Capitals have 54 goals in their last 11 games. It's not possible.
That's good, I think.
It's not even possible. It's ridiculous in hockey. And they're number one in the NHL with 66 points. Have we done the Capitals update?
Yep.
Yeah, I had that ready, but I guess you just stole my thunder
what
on
else
that.
Do you have?
I know you wanted to discuss, well, you know, do you really want to talk about college basketball? You want to talk about some of these games?
Binghamton is—it's just they lost right. again.
Maryland won. You
they
know,
lost. Yep. Binghamton is now 0-5 in the America East, the tough America East. We're not quite a multi-bid league, and by that I mean we will not get multi-bids. Not now, not ever.
Not ever.
Not ever.
Some interesting news from Comcast SportsNet Mid-Atlantic. They're not going to renew their media rights agreement with the Baltimore Ravens, something they've had a partnership with since 2010. So it signals the end of Ravens-specific programming, which you know is preseason games, pre- and post-game shows, training camp. They're not going to do that. They're going to focus on different things, which probably... probably means more of things with monumental sports and entertainment.
Wizards and Capitals.
Yes, which is owned by CEO Ted Leonsis.
And that's fine. I mean, I don't know if what I'm going to say is true, but it would seem, I think that he is an equity partner now. I'm pretty sure.
Believe he
that
is.
So that means that he says, look, I'm going to buy some of this, and we're going to have Wizards programming, and we're going to have Capitals programming, and something's got to give. And that the thing that gave is obviously Baltimore Ravens. But the last time I looked, the appetite and audience for football is, I don't know, maybe 20 times as large as it is for basketball and hockey. Maybe. You don't want to do the exhibition games? The exhibition games. People watch those exhibition
games. Oh, yeah.
As terrible as they are, people watch those exhibition games. And they are involved with football because, again, as we said at the beginning of the show, betting is what makes football the giant sport that it is. You can, if you do a betting kind of show, if you do a preview show and we talk about who's healthy and who's not and what the other team's got going in, you're going to get a lot of viewers.
The footprint of that network extends well up, for those of you that aren't local, outside of D.C.,
right.
up into Baltimore yeah. and north and east.
Yeah. Howard County.
Where the Ravens are big and the
big.
Wizards and Capitals are nothing.
Nothing.
However, I can't blame
however.
Ted Leonsis for wanting to do this. It would make sense in an effort to promote these properties to those audiences.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
I was just handed a note. I was handed a note by Nigel that Mike Freeman, who is going to be with us, is not going to be with us.
Yes, he's taken ill and has to go to the hospital.
So. Oh, no. Yeah.
Hospital, so we hope he's better.
Yes, we do hope he's better.
So we're
He doesn't have a cell phone?
We're going to scramble. We're going to scramble and see if we can get a guest to fill in for Freeman, since I announced Freeman. But I don't know how we're going to do that. And then this gives me time to
think
about
it. My kids are off school today.
I still have lots of news stories that I have not gotten to. I don't know if there's some things that you want to discuss.
Well, maybe. Well, why don't we take a break and huddle up, because that's what we're allowed to do.
We'll vamp.
Because it's a podcast.
Yes.
And we'll make one or two phone calls and see what happens. And more than likely, we will spend the next 15 minutes talking about nothing. I am
extensively
Tony Kornheiser.
Food. We can talk about food.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find qualified and quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Into the Mystic by Van Morrison. God, I love this song. Go get some scotch, everybody. I know it's early. Go out on your porch. Listen to this song. Critical commentary. Why are we playing this? Because I like it. And because he hits notes that are just great. You like this one?
I do, but my favorite is Wild Night.
Wild Nights is very good.
Yeah.
It's very, very good. You know, but this is...
That was much later, wasn't it?
I don't think so. I don't think so. The first big tune was Brown Eyed Girl.
Yeah.
You know, right. after Van Morrison left
them
and went on his own. So we play that. Nigel every once in a while says, why don't we just play something that you really like? And that is always at the top of the list. As we said in the last segment.
Have you ever seen him live?
Yes, didn't particularly enjoy it because he did just the song from one album.
Big boy, right? Two gapper.
You know, I just. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Well, but not, you know, not the tallest guy in the world.
Yeah,
but had a certain meatloaf quality to him. He was getting a little porky.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's fair to say.
In Last Waltz, he looks a little rotund.
Well, this was 30 years after that when I saw him.
Great voice.
He's great. So, as we said in the last segment, Mike Freeman suddenly not feeling well, and so we have to scramble, and we decided, we tried to make a few calls as to who might be willing to come on the show. We called the president.
Yes.
And he was otherwise engaged, and so we gave up after that. And now,
we started at the top.
I just feel that we should do our own show, but... This was a segment that was going, and we haven't talked about this. This segment was going to be devoted to the football games tomorrow, as well as other NFL things. I mean, we talked about moving to Las Vegas.
Football game Sunday, right?
Yeah, it's Sunday. I mean Sunday, not Saturday. We could talk about Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan is sort of interesting in this regard. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this thing. But Kyle Shanahan appears to be clearly the guy that the San Francisco 49ers are going to hire to be their coach.
You rarely see this, right? When a guy's still acting, they just basically say, that's our guy. As soon as they're done, we're going to get him. I mean, why would you give him so much leverage?
I think we saw this some time back with both Norv Turner and who's the guy, Dave Wannstedt, when they were Dallas coordinators, and Dallas was on that great run.
Oh, that's right.
And they were hired while the season was still going on. I'm pretty sure that happened. At least one of them was. And it was, you know, the question was, how much time would they devote to Dallas? And it seemed to work out for Dallas because Dallas won. Neither of them was particularly successful as a head coach in the NFL.
Were they hired or was just so strongly rumored that they were as good
as
hired?
I don't
that's
know.
That's how I remember it.
That's what this is with Kyle Shanahan. Yeah. Kyle Shanahan has made good quarterbacks very good and very good quarterbacks great. He is not remembered fondly in Washington because Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan are thought to be the villains in the Robert Griffin III drama because they played him when he was not 100%. And then he, of course, tried to come back the next year when he knew he was not 100%.
I'd suggest the Shanahans.
But I don't think it's true.
I would suggest the Shanahans are remembered more fondly by the moment.
Yes, as each time goes on. Yeah. Because they both preferred Kirk Cousins to Robert Griffin.
Well, and talk about a Kyle Shanahan offense. I mean, now we know what Robert Griffin is capable of, or more appropriately, is not capable of in this league.
Right. And so he looks better and better.
Right. Yeah, and you see what
and he does it. Kyle Shanahan made Matt Schaub look pretty good for a year or two in Houston, a guy who just could not play after that. So Kyle Shanahan seems to be
the
right fit. And his dad may very well go with him and sort of run the team. And the question there, and it's interesting because it's the same question that happens in Washington, D.C. Jed York, everything he touches in San Francisco is bad. Mm-hmm. He made four coaching hires. He started with Mike Singletary, who was not a good pro coach.
No.
He then picked absolutely the right guy, Jim Harbaugh, who got him to the Super Bowl. And within a year, he fired Jim Harbaugh because he didn't like Jim Harbaugh. They didn't get along and they didn't get along. Jim Harbaugh and Trent Baalke, the GM, didn't get along. He fired Harbaugh and he hired Jim Tom Sula,
who
lasted 1 year. And then he hired Chip Kelly, who lasted 1 year. So Jed York is in that circumstance of being a young, aggressive owner who is meddlesome and picks the wrong people. So will he back away? Well, will he allow his coach and general manager to run the team?
Didn't Shanahan manage to strike that deal with Dan Snyder, who had previously been meddlesome? Didn't Shanahan insist when he came here that Snyder would keep his hands off the team?
But he did not.
As others before him had.
Yes, and never won.
But I thought Shanahan had a little more success than previous.
I think the success is now.
Well,
in
the
McLuhan.
Wake of Shanahan. Yeah, with McLuhan and yeah.
Jay Gruden.
Thank you.
Good job out of you, Gary.
Yeah.
That guy. Well, it's football. Redskin season's over, so I've turned on to women's basketball. But, no one would argue. I don't think you could argue now that Snyder is hands-on with the Redskins.
He's left it alone.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
He's left it alone. And so now, if you don't like what's going on, now go look at the people who are responsible for it. Look at the GM, look at the head coach, look at the coordinator, look at that. I mean, just look at that.
Well, again, for the Redskins, do you draw the line and say, okay, well, if they don't lock up Cousins to a long-term deal, does he end up going out to San Francisco?
He certainly could.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't that seem like
yes,
a
Yes, absolutely.
And
it's
Sean
absolutely
McVay,
logical.
Of course.
Los Angeles is looking great, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
That looks absolutely possible, which may have prompted the Boz column yesterday, which tried to prove statistically that Kirk Cousins was in the top five quarterbacks in the NFL, which may be provable statistically, except when you watch him,
doesn't mean
you know it's not true.
Yeah, right.
And it doesn't mean he's bad. I mean, it's sort of what I'm saying, or what I've said about John Wall's having a great season. It doesn't mean he's Steph Curry or James Harden or, you know, Russell Westbrook or anybody like that. Kirk Cousins, fine. He's fine. But do you think he's in the top five because the stats say he is?
It's well, I think if you're Kyle Shanahan, you think I can rebuild this San Francisco thing pretty quickly with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now McVay's another. I mean, if you're McVay, and keep in mind he was here with that Robert Griffin stuff. Do you take that job if you don't believe you can do something with Goff?
Right. If you're Sean McVay, the way you got that job was you interviewed with the owner and you said, I know you spent a lot of money on Jared Goff. I'm going to make him
work.
Great.
Right.
You know, you can't go there and say, I'd like to bring in Kirk Cousins. Even if you'd like to bring in Kirk Cousins, you can't do that.
Well, and I'm guessing McVay used Cousins' performance in the last couple of years his credential.
Right. Yeah.
And his growth. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's funny you mentioned that approach because many theorize that was exactly what Jay Gruden did when he got this job. I know you spent a lot of money on that Robert Griffin, and I'm going to make it work.
Right.
And he did make it work by jettisoning him and coaching up the other guy.
Yeah. Okay. So,
by the way, Wild Night, 1971, Into the Mystic, 1974. So I had it exactly backwards.
Okay.
Gene was
right. All right. So there are these two games on Sunday, and this is the highlight of the NFL season, basically. Two games to get to the Super Bowl. Pittsburgh at New England and Green Bay at Atlanta. We will start with you, Gene. Who do you like?
I think the Falcons are going to beat Green Bay.
This is the position that Steve Young and Ron Jaworski have taken.
In spite of Aaron Rodgers' incredible game last week,
you think it runs out?
I think it runs out. I watched the Falcons game last week, and I was overwhelmed by Matt Ryan. I don't think I've seen a Falcons game all year until I saw that one. It just
Shanny effect
seemed unbeatable. I think New England will win. I was surprised to see how much the defense got to Tom Brady last week.
Houston
got to him.
Pittsburgh's better.
Pittsburgh
Their
is
rush
better.
Is better.
But Pittsburgh couldn't score a touchdown.
That's right. Six field goals.
Right. So I guess I would say Patriots and Falcons.
Gary?
Well, in the NFC, I think it's folly to handicap it. I mean, whoever has the ball last is going to win. I mean, that's what I think is going to happen, and that's what I hope is going to happen. I think that could be just an epic 38-35 type game, which would just be awesome. I mean, I don't have a rooting interest. Although I find Aaron Rodgers very easy to root for.
Yeah.
And then the AFC, I think I agree with Gene. I don't. I mean, it's interesting that you say you think Pittsburgh's defense. Well,
their rushing of the passer has been over the last half of the season better than anybody's. That's all I've said.
Yeah, I think their ability to get to Brady with three or four guys. I mean, I don't know enough about. I don't think it is on par with. I think they'll have a difficult time getting to Brady with three or four guys.
And I think
that's what you have to do. So I think they will lose. And New England's had their number.
I feel like I'm just repeating the storyline, but I agree. I didn't see any Falcons games this year. And until last night when I heard Jaws on PTI breaking down all the offensive weapons that the Falcons have, I just think they're going to overwhelm the Patriots, and I agree. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game.
No, they're going to overwhelm the Packers.
Packers, sorry, right, sir. And I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, and I agree this could come down to the end. I just think there's going to be too many scores for Aaron Rodgers to dance around and to overcome by himself. I just don't think he has the same options. And I think last week was a great learning game for Deion Lewis and for the Patriots' rush, and I think that's going to give them a little bit more time to find something downfield, even with that rush from Pittsburgh.
Nigel?
I don't think I can pick against Rodgers. I mean, just watching him until he shows he can't come through in a game like this, I just think he's the difference maker in that. I don't truly believe in Matt Ryan, even though I think that they're a terrific team. And as you point out, Mike, they've got a great set of offensive weapons. I just think Aaron Rodgers will find a way to win that game because that's what he's been doing. In terms of the Patriots and the Steelers, I think the Steelers will probably cover that game. I think the line's six. I think it'll be much closer than that. But I think in the end, what the Patriots are doing this year, I mean, they're on a higher mission. They desperately want to have Goodell have to hand them that trophy. And I think they're sort of on a sense of purpose with that. And I think they'll be too difficult to beat at their home stadium.
Mr. Tony?
I think at this point that I think that Belichick has been in six Super Bowls and Brady has been in six Super Bowls, and I think that's more than anybody else. I don't know that anybody else has been in six.
Yeah.
I think Shula coached in five. Charles Haley was in five.
Yeah,
I don't know that anybody's been in six, so they may have the number already. If they get to seven, that's obviously a big number. Indisputable. And I think that they are driven by the anger of a thousand suns because of what Roger Goodell has done to Tom Brady. I think that they will win the game, but Pittsburgh is not the team that I would want to play because Pittsburgh is a veteran team and they've got people who have won Super Bowls and they've got a coach who's been in some Super Bowls. I just knocked my microphone out. And so they're not going to be afraid. They're not going to be intimidated on any level. I could see Pittsburgh winning though. I want New England to win. I want New England to win the Super Bowl. I want Roger Goodell to have to go and hand them the trophy. I will root for Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers is remarkable. I will tell you what, for those people who are listening who did not see PTI the other day, and I'm sure there are legions of you, Steve Young was on. Steve Young's brilliant. Steve Young's the best person to talk to about football in the world. And Steve Young, as a quarterback, was talking about Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. And he talked about the difference in art and science. And he said Brady is a scientist out there. Brady understands the immediate calculation of everything that is going on. He knows if you rush X amount of people, these things will be available to him. If you rush X plus three, more things will be available to him. And he says Rodgers is art. Rodgers is in movement all the time. Rodgers is improvising all the time. Rodgers is making things happen. And Rodgers' great gift is not only his athleticism, but he can throw the ball so quickly and throw it so hard without having to take his arm all the way back. And while he was talking, I got the sense that he was saying that he admired Rodgers more than Brady. And of course, that made sense to me because he was an Aaron Rodgers type of quarterback. But in fact, what he said was he admired Brady more because Brady had less to work with. Brady, being the scientist, could not run around, didn't have any of those things, and had to quickly make decisions and go to the next option, the next option, the next option, knowing that his time was running out, whereas Rodgers seemed to have an unlimited amount of time. And I found that fascinating because I find Steve Young really, really smart. He picked Atlanta. He basically said it cannot go on forever, and Atlanta is a better team And you know, I'm probably persuaded by that, but I will find myself rooting for Brady and for Rodgers because that's a Super Bowl I want to see.
In the NFC, you want it would be great to feel like you could get behind one of those defenses, and you just I don't feel like I can now. Maybe you can Atlanta just because they're home. If you want to give them that, but they don't scare you.
No, and neither team has a particular defense. It hurts. Obviously, it hurts the Packers enormously that Jordy Nelson doesn't play.
Right.
I mean, it does.
I thought that would do them last week, but they got around.
They
it.
Were 4-6 at one point in this season.
Nobody lost to the Redskins.
Nobody else in this position in the Final Four was 4-6. I don't believe. Yeah, they did. They lost to the Redskins. That's not a great loss.
Belichick and Shula tied with 6 appearances as
so
a head
Shula
coach.
So Shula has been in 6 as a head coach. So 4 with the Dolphins and 2 with the Colts.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that how that works?
Yes, I believe
okay.
so.
Okay, yes. So we'll see.
And there was Mike Lodish has been in 6 Super Bowls. I'm not familiar with him as a player.
Didn't he play for the Patriots?
Did he? I'm not sure. I just saw his name and it was
I thought
he
played for the Patriots. L-O-D-I-S-H?
Yes, that's right.
I think he played at least for a while for the Patriots. Was he an offensive lineman for the Patriots?
I'm not familiar with him.
Some people have been in a lot. Matt Millen was in 4 or 5. Charles Haley was in 4
Buffalo
or 5.
Bills.
Buffalo Bills?
Drafted by the lineman? Bills in the 1990.
Okay, so he was in all 4 with the Bills. And where else did he play?
Denver.
Okay.
Yeah, right. That would make sense.
All right, so we will take a break here. I thought we got through that. We hope Freeman's well.
Yes, we
yes,
will.
Yeah, we do.
We got through this, and we will have jingles and email when we return.
It's great that you took advantage of being in D.C. and did a whole inaugural special.
I didn't. I should have, but maybe next year. I think the big moment is the State of the Union.
Yeah, we'll do it then.
You can't wait for the State of the Union speech. That's the one where you go, whoa.
And for the record, you're taking the over for the speech. 19.5 minutes is the number for the inaugural
for today's?
Speech. Yes.
Only because I think he might walk around and he might like want to bathe.
But the rain could impact this.
Yeah, the rain will cut
it
down.
I'm going under.
Quick clarification. Mike Lodish, Don Beebe, Tom Brady have all been to 6 Super Bowls. Beebe only played in 3. Brady and Lodish, the only players to have played in 6.
So if they get to 1, Brady stretches it out if he gets to this.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Catering to new Epicurean habits, straying far from those newspaper days. Serving up some lamb speedies and the cheesery. Connie Chung has got your tab, and hey, Junior's clearing trays. So instead of all those Pulitzer dreams, you'll want to entice media elite with a martini, some linguine, please, no kale or beets. Maybe that son of yours can smoke some meat. Cheeseburgers and friendship pints. Got the blue apron, a recipe for jasmine rice. A jersey from OV, one with pinstripes from Bryce. Come get a cheeseburger and friendship pipes. They make fries like those in bowling alleys. Rascals on the jukebox right next to Frankie Valley. Coach Gary's hawking sweatshirts, Maury serving beers. Well, good God almighty, this won't last a year. Who needs cheeseburgers and friendship pipes?
Oh,
it's
my
brilliant.
God, that
brilliant.
Is brilliant.
It's John Fitzpatrick. It's totally brilliant.
I think the Bryce
so
jersey
great.
And pinstripes
it's
might be my
totally
favorite
totally brilliant.
That is great.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to the Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday. We want to wish Mike Freeman a speedy recovery from whatever ails him. I also want to thank our sponsors today, MeUndies and ZipRecruiter. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review.
Positive, preferably.
Yes. Our thoughts go out to Adam Benson in St. John's in Newfoundland in Canada. And we start with Jesse Little in Hermosa Beach, California. Dear Mr. Porthauser, my name is Jesse Little. I'm a Little, and I'm the Executive Vice President for LD Entertainment, the company that produced and partnered with Fox Searchlight to release Jackie.
Uh-oh.
I had an email read once before a few years back after Anne was randomly very complimentary of Disconnect and The Gray, other LD films. I guess I want to thank you for not completely smashing Jackie. You weren't necessarily complimentary of it. Wait, I admire it very much.
You're protective of
it. I am tremendously protective of the legacy of Jackie Kennedy. And he said, but you didn't completely Kornheiser it, which I'm thankful for. It was tough to listen to you tease your thoughts on the film for 2 days, so I suppose it was nice of you to completely demolish the film. To hear you talk about Jackie was a David... to not completely demolish the film. To hear you talk about Jackie was a David Aldridge moment for me. you should feel very good then that Anne was so defended it and said
it
in her
times.
Third view, it just gets better and better and better. To answer a few of your questions, the interview with Billy Crudup actually happened. However, who really knows what was said on the side that didn't make it into the article? I went through the contracts on Jackie. I can't find Noah's age either, so I guess he's older than we think he is. Correct, Jackie never released a memoir, so we were forced to take some creative license in order to fill in the gaps in the story. That's it. That's the list. You're welcome. That's a great email.
That's great.
Thank you, Jesse. From Jeff McAleer in Springfield, Virginia. I've spent the last 3 months doing the technical build-out for the new DirecTV studio on New Jersey Avenue, where Rich Eisen hosted his show this week. I was on site yesterday when the show was being recorded, but I wasn't paying close attention to who was in the studio with him. I had this brief panic listening to the podcast when you started to talk about being on his show. I thought for sure I'd miss the opportunity to shout La Cheeseria at a bald orange man and confuse all of my coworkers in the process. I don't know why I worried. I should have known there was no chance you would actually show up in person. Right. None. Yeah, zero.
No chance. Zero.
From Tim.
But it's nice to know a guy who can build a studio.
That's good. We maybe have to talk to him. From Tim in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, by way of the Vestal Parkway, which is Route 17 in New York State. For the last few years, I would always wonder when I would work up the courage to finally email you. Well, tonight, my twin brother, who I finally convinced to start listening to the podcast after years of suggesting, kept texting me to see if I finished listening to the episode. I finally had my David Aldridge in the form of African Road Junior High School in Vestal, New York, where I grew up. It brings me so much joy whenever I hear you talk about Binghamton, but the mention of Vestal is on a whole other level. Thanks to you and the gang for many years of laughs, and kudos to bringing Michael on board. The father-son exchanges you share bring a wonderful dynamic to this new podcast. From Mark Corriere in Ellicott City in Maryland. I'm a huge fan of Andy Poley from his days on your show and ESPN 980. I was very sad to hear that his run on local radio has ended. We need to find a positive from the situation. Do you think there's an opening at Chad's for him to be the maitre d'?
There we go.
Well, him and Tommy.
Possibly, yeah.
Him and
yeah.
Tommy Giacomo, for sure.
Right.
You could give him a golf shirt to wear, and this would expand his wardrobe as
yes,
well. We
would.
Could certainly do that. From Sean Mathy or Mathy in Brooklyn, my mother-in-law texted me recently to tell me she was sitting next to Bob Ryan in a coffee shop in Hingham, Massachusetts. She knows me as a huge fan of Mr. Ryan's writing, and she knew I would be tickled by her brush with fame. However, my full transformation into a little must be complete, because all I could think of was, I know that guy. He's a guest on Mr. Tony's podcast, and he sits in on PTI. It's the connective tissue I have to tell Mr. Tony. So much for Ryan's career as America's quintessential sports writer. This show's stink has enveloped yet another unsuspecting victim. From Dwayne Coleman, director of banquets at the Ritz-Carlton in Tyson's Corner, Virginia. Chris's breakdown of Dawson's Creek earlier this week was impressive. Being an avid Creek fan, that's what me and my friends called it in high school, I was stunned with his knowledge of the characters. Pronouncing their first and last names makes him sound really smart. I thought to myself, how could someone that tried to drink an entire gallon of ice-cold milk be cool enough to watch the Dawson's Creek? Well, we all have our moments. I hope to one day meet Mr. Saliza so we can go into a more thorough breakdown of the show, maybe sipping wine in the Saliza seats at a Nats game. What a day that would be. From Tom Lewis in Fishers, Indiana, after hearing the comment about Joe DiMaggio the other day about his collection of golf clubs, a couple of questions quickly came to mind. One, would DiMaggio's declining mental health have been helped if he used Shipsticks? And two, if not for Shipsticks, would Tony's mental health be in further decline? And if he did dip into the DiMaggio zone, would Tony keep a set of clubs in groups of four? Just one more.
Go ahead.
Eric Lund. First of all, love the podcast. On one of these slow news days, and that's would be today, could you do a show about how you all ended up together and first impressions of one another? I always wanted to know how the TK cast was formed. Keep up the good work, and I plan to fly from San Francisco to the new restaurant once it opens. Thank you. It is open. It's open now. We just don't have a new name. And the short answer on this, and I won't give the long answer, the short answer is I want people around me who are smart and funny. It's very simple. I want people who are smart and funny, and everybody here is a friend, which I think adds to the warmth of the show, right? That sort of makes the familiarity of the show is we don't reach out to athletes. We're dopes.
Reach out to anybody.
No, we don't.
Only to push them away, further away.
Yeah. If you're out on your bike, time to everyone, as always, do wear what?
Andy Poley.